more and more companies are choosing to take a political stance on political and social issues, most recently, gun control. Over 20 companies known to provide benefits to NRA members have made promises to eliminate those discounts. That includes airlines, insurance companies, and banks on that list after threats of boycotts. Additionally, Dick's Sporting Goods store has released a statement declaring they'll stop selling assault rifles and selling guns for anyone under the age of 21. Walmart is also raising their minimum age for gun purchases. Companies who wish to keep a neutral tone find themselves facing criticism on social media, leaving them in a tough spot. Derek Thompson is a senior editor at The Atlantic, where he writes about economics, labor markets, and the media. His recent piece is "Why Are Corporations Finally Turning Against the NRA?" Derek, welcome back to the show.
Thanks. It's great to be here.
Well, this is new territory in some ways. I can't remember this widespread corporate movement to dissociate with the NRA. What's going on?
Yeah, so I kind of break it down into four big variables. I think there are four essential reasons why companies are turning against the NRA. Four theories, at least, might be overlapping. The first theory, very basically, is that this is about consumers, because these are businesses, and everything businesses do is about consumers. That they've essentially noticed that even if Republicans seem to dominate politics in the U.S., the White House, Congress, state legislatures, that consumers in the U.S. Tend to be younger and tend to lean a little bit further to the left. So this is about responding to their customers. The second is that maybe this is about not just attracting consumers who might be more liberal, but also recruiting potential employees who might be more liberal. And when you think about the sort of employees that larger Fortune 500 companies want to bring in, they tend to be college graduates, they tend to be young, and indeed we've seen in poll after poll that young college graduates have an overwhelmingly negative impression, not only of Trump, but also of the Republican Party. Number three, I think you could look inside the companies and say, well, maybe the boards of directors, maybe the employees at that company might be leaning left on various issues, including gun control, and for that reason, the companies are incentivized to follow their own rank and file. And then number four, maybe the most clever or savvy theory here, is that some of these larger companies that have moved against the NRA, say Delta, United in the airline industry, or Walmart in the retail industry, that these are large companies and relatively consolidated industries that might face antitrust pressure under a future liberal administration. And so in a way, this might be a way to buy favor, to curry favor with liberals today in the hopes that when they gain power in Washington, they don't try to break up these companies or punish them with higher taxes. So you put all of that together, you can say, A, they're doing it for the consumers, B, they're doing it for the recruits, C, they're doing it for the boards of directors, or D, this is a long game strategy to prepare for a future of liberal governance.
Let's take a look at A for a moment. The idea that this is to appeal to consumers, there's people trying to have a boycott, they don't want their brand maybe associated with a controversial organization. But any decision they make like this is going to anger another group of consumers, namely NRA members.
That is exactly right. Yeah, I mean, you could say that, you know, the NRA only has a few million, maybe 3 to 5 million members. You know, United flies, I think, 140 million people every year. So if you do the arithmetic, you could say that, well, it is a risk worth taking. But I think the interesting question embedded in your query is, why is it such a risk? I think what you're seeing today is that there's this enormous politicization of the public sphere, and it's forcing nonpartisan companies to take partisan stands. And it doesn't just start with the NRA. It doesn't just start with guns. We saw this in the gay marriage debate. Over 400 companies filed an amicus brief in 2015 urging the Supreme Court to legalize same-sex marriage. You saw it with the immigration debate. Hundreds of executives, many of them from tech companies, signed a letter last year that urged the president to protect Dreamers, undocumented workers brought to the U.S. as children. When North Carolina passed its transgender bathroom law, the NCAA announced that they were going to pull its college basketball tournament from the state, and other companies similarly withdrew their business. So I could keep listening, but I don't want to bore the listeners. The point is, this isn't just about guns. This is about guns and transgender rights and immigrants and the future of gay marriage. This is about a lot of issues where companies have essentially come down rather far to the left on social issues of the Republican Party, and that has forced them in some ways to fight back against Republican policies.
So why is that different now? Groups on the left and right have tried boycotting different companies over the years and decades, and, you know, with success sometime, with little success other times. Why this movement? Why now?
Yeah, so I think, let's just first take this particular NRA debate, because I don't know yet that I have, a universal theory of why companies suddenly become activists in political debates. But I think that if you look at a combination of demographics plus a spark, a certain catalyst, that gets you a long way toward a universal theory. So the demographics of the U.S. are such that even though older, more conservative Americans tend to control politics, it's younger, more liberal Americans who are either richer or about to become the major consumers in the economy. And because of that generational schism, it can be a little bit confusing looking back and forth from politics to corporate America deciding, is America conservative on social issues? You look to politics, you say yes. You look to companies, you say no, and back and forth. The other thing, though, that's happened clearly with regard to the NRA and this debate that we've had after the Parkland shooting is the teenage response, the response of these remarkable teenagers in Florida has, I think, been an incredible catalyst for a social media rebellion against the NRA that has very effectively pressured a handful of companies to change their policies, particularly on sponsoring NRA members. And that once you have a couple of these large companies that have made a decision, like United and Delta, and some of the car rental companies, that it pressures other companies in that industry, in the travel industry, let's say, to make a decision, to say, all right, we have to decide whether or not we're going to stand with the NRA, essentially, or follow where everyone else in our industry is going. And people, a lot of these companies essentially have decided that it's safer to follow.
Talking to Derek Thompson from The Atlantic, looking at corporations cutting ties with the NRA and some retail outlets changing their policies on selling guns. One of those companies, Dick's Sporting Goods, they released a memo saying they're not going to sell assault-style weapons. They're no longer going to sell firearms to people under 21 years of age, no longer going to sell high-capacity magazines, and they called on elected officials to enact, quoting here, common-sense gun reform. Here's a listen to CEO of Dick's. This is Ed Stack on Good Morning America talking about the move.
And we know that this isn't going to make everyone happy, but when we take a look at what those kids and the parents and the heroes in the school, what they did, and our view was if the kids can be brave enough to organize like this, we can be brave enough to take these out of here.
So is this part of maybe the board of directors angle you were talking about earlier, Derek? This is actually a company examining their thoughts and their values and making a decision?
Yeah, it's a little bit of that. I guess I want to call your attention and listeners' attention to two words in that comment. The first is kids. The first is the fact that these teenagers have really been a remarkable political force, and they have brought pressure on the NRA that is relatively unprecedented in modern American history. He mentioned them because they're top of mind, and they're top of mind because they've been unbelievably effective. The second word that I want to call your attention to is the word brave. He called the kids brave, and I think that's an understatement, but he also called the company brave. And that's really interesting because he's essentially trying to signal that this isn't just about them following. This isn't just about them capitulating to public pressure. This is about them taking a stand and saying this decision aligns with our values. And so I think that it's on the one hand, you could say, you know, if I were a business school professor, I might say, every company needs to be able to write down its purpose on an index card, and every decision, right, like just has to click back to that purpose. That's sort of the classic sort of corporate leadership philosophy, that your company doesn't just stand for a bottom line, it also stands for something above that bottom line, values. But as a more cynical journalist, I would say, he is signaling bravery in order to get people in the left of center and liberals in America who are critical of the NRA to compliment the company. They've essentially made the decision that there is a cultural war going on right now around the issue of guns, and they will win if they advertise themselves as aligning with the liberal cause, as aligning with the gun control cause. And so this clicks right back, I guess, not only to the third thing that I mentioned at the top of the segment about how it reflects, about how these moves reflect the sentiment of boards and employees, but the fourth thing that I said, which is that in many ways these companies are virtue signaling. They are doing their best to say, you know, we don't just stand for bottom line. This is our way of communicating an element of corporate social responsibility. And so I think that you're seeing a lot of that as well. A lot of these companies are not just quietly making these decisions. They're trying to wrap up these decisions as a kind of corporate bravery.
Derek Thompson is with us, senior editor at The Atlantic. His recent piece is Why Are Corporations Finally Turning Against the NRA? We're seeing companies cutting discounts for NRA members, changing their policies on gun sales. You can join in at 800-642-1234. What do you think when you see an airline, a bank, an insurance company, whatever, publicly saying we're no longer going to have these NRA discounts, taking a stance on this issue or other issues? What do you think about Walmart's and Dick's, each offering different reasons, changing their gun sale policies? Call in at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas@WPR.org. We'll continue the conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. It's Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. Derek Thompson is with us, senior editor at The Atlantic. We're talking about the corporate response to the latest firearms debate since the mass shooting at a Florida school. A lot of businesses are ending their discount programs or other associate deals for NRA members, and some retailers are changing their policies on what guns they'll sell and what age you need to be to buy them. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Have you used an NRA discount for an airline or insurance company? What do you think of the idea of companies distancing themselves and publicly announcing it when they distance themselves from the NRA? Should companies be more or less involved in social issues? Call 800-642-1234 or tweet us at Central Time WPR. To your calls now, Charlie is with us in Milwaukee. Charlie, hi.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. I guess the question I have is that with all these companies that are doing things, I think there's a whole group of people who might be fiscally conservative yet socially liberal. There aren't a lot of candidates who fit that bill, and you're almost forced to choose one or the other, and it only contributes to the hyper-partisanship that is going on right now. Is there a chance that we could have someone who is a little more moderate or able to compromise on these things so that if you do have conservative views on one thing, you don't have to take the whole bag and be able to compromise a little more?
Charlie, thanks for the call. I don't want to go too far into the election politics here, but Derek, he said fiscally conservative, socially liberal, and it seems like that's where a lot of companies are ending up these days.
That's exactly what I was going to say. Exactly what I was going to say, which is that companies themselves are exactly that. They are fiscally conservative, which is to say in as much as they want taxes cut, they want regulations cut, they want anything that allows them to maximize their bottom line, their cash flow. On the other hand, we do see that increasingly a lot of these Fortune 500 companies are what you would have to call socially liberal. They stand on the side of gay marriage, they support transgender rights, and now they are increasingly standing up against the NRA. I would define that position as being fiscally conservative but socially liberal. But it turns out that when you try to run on a platform of fiscal conservatism and social liberalism, it doesn't get you that far. It doesn't get you that far because the Republican Party is not socially liberal. So, all right, you can't run as a Republican. Donald Trump won in many ways explicitly because he is not socially liberal, because he is essentially, a traditionalist, a reactionary. And then on the left, Bernie Sanders was he pulled Hillary Clinton and to the left on economic issues, because the promise of higher taxes and universal health care, potential Medicare for all, was so attractive to so many people because they're so concerned about inequality. So on the left, it seems like fiscal liberalism was the winning formula in 2016, and on the right, it seems like social conservatism is the winning issue. So in a way, to have the corporatist position here that the caller identified is a losing platform in both parties. It's not to say that a, you know, Michael Bloomberg-style candidate couldn't potentially be successful in some future presidential election. I think 2016 taught us, above all, to be circumspect about our ability to predict the future. But that said, I don't see any that either of the parties right now are receptive to that kind of message.
Charlie, thanks for the call. Go next to Kika in McFarland. Hi.
Oh, hi. Yes, I keep thinking that there is a parallel with the NRA and the tobacco industry back when it was identified the tobacco was a dangerous product for society. And I see that NRA has a dangerous product, you know, for society, and that the same way that the health industry came forward pressing, you know, legislation and change at that time to make that recognized, I think that these companies now are kind of doing the same thing. And for that reason, they deserve our respect and our admiration.
Kika, thanks for the call. Do you see those parallels? Tobacco industry of the past, the gun industry of today, Derek?
It's hard to say. On the one hand, let me be extremely unhelpful and give you an on the one hand, on the other hand answer. On the one hand, we have seen that American attitudes and social issues can change relatively quickly. They changed seemingly overnight on gay marriage. They have changed radically in the last 10 years on marijuana. So gay marriage and marijuana do suggest that Americans can change their mind relatively quickly. And maybe that will happen with guns. Maybe it's happening right now. On the other hand, guns are different than every other product in the United States. They're different than marijuana, they're different than tobacco, they're different from cars. And that's because enshrined in the Bill of Rights, right there after the number two, we have an amendment guaranteeing every American's right to own a firearm. I have my own issues with the Second Amendment. We don't need to go into them. But the bottom line is that the Second Amendment is there. And amendments are incredibly sticky. Overturning them is quite an ordeal. So that amendment isn't going anywhere anytime soon. And as long as it isn't going anywhere, as long as tens of millions of Americans equate their definition of American freedom with the ability to own a firearm, and relatively any firearm at that, even if it's a military-style weapon, once you have that enshrined in the Constitution and in the American concept of its own freedoms, it becomes very difficult, I think, to extract that. So I gave you a very unhelpful, on the one hand, on the other hand, answer, but I'm probably going to fall into the second category and say that despite all of these changes, you don't see Walmart saying, you know, we're not going to sell any more guns. You have them saying, we're not going to sell any guns to people who can't legally drink alcohol. That's essentially the bargain that they've struck.
Kika, thanks for that call. Derek, I want to quote from your piece here on this. You write, corporations are becoming more democratic than democratic governance itself, end quote there, because they're the ones, they respond faster to public opinion, political outcries. Can you talk more about that?
Sure. I mean, it just seems to me that when you look at a lot of public polls about, you know, gun policy or tax policy or even immigration policy, that American majoritarian attitudes just aren't reflected in representative government. Americans are more positive toward immigrants' impact on the economy than ever, than in the history of polls. And yet we have a president who's trying to cut legal immigration by half. The same thing is happening with tax policy. Americans essentially want to raise taxes on the rich, and the Republican corporate tax cut did the opposite. So if you just look at politics, you'd have to say democracy isn't working, or at least democracy isn't, I'm not suggesting that elections are illegitimate, but that the attitudes of Americans aren't being reflected in its leaders. But then, you look at at business. And you know, businesses have to respond to the public, to the polity, to the democratic whims, as stupid or wise as they may be, relatively immediately. Every week, as I wrote in the piece, is essentially a political primary for a consumer brand. You can lose consumer share just like that at the drop of a hat. And so whereas a lot of politicians, I think, assume they can wait out the outrage, assume that maybe they can pass a tax policy that the majority of Americans don't like by winning votes on a message of anti-immigration and sort of culture war fighting. A lot of, I think, companies don't have that same ability to just blame the other side. They have to respond to the immediacy of demand, and for that reason, I think one could defend a cheeky statement such as the one that I made, which is that, ironically, American companies have become more democratic than democratic governance.
Derek, thanks a lot for joining us.
My pleasure. Thank you.
That's Derek Thompson, senior editor at The Atlantic, where he writes about economics, labor markets, and the media. He joined us to talk about the recent wave of companies taking a stance in the gun debate. Coming up tomorrow here on Central Time, campaign staffs aren't usually unionized, but that may be starting to change. We'll find out why one Wisconsin congressional campaign is on a short list of union shops. There was a big rise in reports of anti-Semitic incidents in 2017. We'll look at the details and some of the possible causes. And on this week's edition of Food Friday, we'll get over any fears of baking that are holding us back in the kitchen. That and more coming up tomorrow here on Central Time.